The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty, for yesterday is but a dream, and tomorrow is only a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. In today lie all the possibilities for your life. And if we try, if we practice, we can be thankful for today, for every day. My prayer is through all of life, we are able to express thanks. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, and I am so thankful that we are here together this morning. My ministry is a shared vocation and one I give great thanks for each and every time this community is gathered. It's shared, and that is what makes it holy, what makes more connections to a world in need of connection. Our shared of ministry is one where we volunteer to do readings in worship or lead a service ourselves. It's bringing food to a potluck lunch. That's the second Sunday of every month, so come. Our ministry is calling up visiting friends to see how they're doing, ministry is planning or attending social justice activities. There's a meeting today, right? That's ministry. Ministry is volunteering our time, donating our money, showing up, and being present. Being present is a ministry. And for all of the ministries we have here in this room, I am grateful. Unitarian Universalism is a shared ministry with a theological grounding. And that theological grounding states that you and him and her and them are beloved, are worthy of love. What you do, what they do with their lives matters. You are important. That's the theological grounding. We are all worthy of love. We all have dignity. That's the foundation of our faith, that we are important, that we are beloved. And from that grounding comes the truth that we can each participate in community building, the truth that we are the ones who do the important shared ministry. So come. Come, let us minister to one another. Come, let us minister to the world. Come, let us worship together. Each Sunday, we light the symbol of our free faith, the flaming chalice. The flaming chalice was first used as a symbol of freedom and hope for people persecuted in Nazi Germany. And currently, it can represent many things: the warmth of community, a flame of hope for better times, the light of reason. Whatever you hold in your heart as a central tenet of Unitarian Universalism can be symbolized by this light. I've asked committee council members who are present to come forward to light our chalice. So if you are part of that and you wish to, we are a culture of consent. So if you are part of that and wish to, please come forward. The committee council is a group of community congregational leaders, committee leaders, who meet regularly under the leadership of Joanne Walker, thank you, Joanne, to give input and cross-pollinate ideas. So the social justice head is there with the communications head, with the building and grounds, with the board, so that they all know what each other are doing, right? Acknowledging the plurality, on top of the hymnal. Yeah, right there. Yeah. Just keep going. Acknowledging the plurality of our faith. Opposite way.
We're doing great today.
No, we are doing great. You got it. Acknowledging the plurality of our lives, the plurality of our beliefs, the plurality of the symbols that this has in it, we light our chalice. With these words, it's a shared ministry. This is shared ministry, yes. Rejoice. Rejoice with full hearts, beloved people of blessings, rejoice. May this time of worship celebrate what we know at our core. Blessings are real and ours to claim and radiate. Blessings are abundant and ours to revel in and pass along. Blessings are transformational and ours to be challenged by as we grow towards the faith we know we can be. Rejoice. And at this congregation, we light and kindle one more flame each Sunday, a symbol of our community's wish for peace that we know must begin in our hearts. This is the flame which reminds us to be peaceful in our own actions as we work toward peace elsewhere. So please respond to the words on the screen. May peace be with us. Thank you, committee council. Joanne was actually just embodying how we have to come together to do the ministry of this congregation. Today we are going to light another flame in our mind and in our hearts today. If you could imagine a wreath. I wasn't here early enough to find it. I looked. Jerry, maybe we can look afterwards. An Advent wreath. evergreen wreath with four candles around the outside and one in the middle. We light this in our imagination today, acknowledging Unitarian Universalist Judeo-Christian history, and also acknowledging the plurality of belief we have here. There is always space in the front row for people who enter at the most opportune time. Please join me up front. So in your minds, in your hearts, we are going to light a purple candle of hope. And next week we may light it in reality, and then a second candle for the second week of Advent. Let us now join our hearts, our voices as we sing. I ask you to rise in body or in spirit, and there's still lots of space up front if you want to move up. We have hymnals in the back. If you like to hold something, I like to hold something. I like to read the music to see what it is and what differences there may be with the video, because sometimes they're not quite the same. The lyrics will be on the screen, and they're in your hymnal number 67. We sing now together. Please be seated. If you want to come forward now, there are still spots, but usually this is a time when, I'll just keep saying it, there's a joke with ministers that if we did the pews, or the proverbial pews, the chairs on a conveyor belt, like service starts, the first row just drops and everyone moves forward. But we're going to have a story now. I don't have a book. It's going to be a story I'm telling with pictures up here. So if you want to be closer to the pictures, there's seats right here. You do not have to. It's no pressure. Again, a culture of consent. Always consent. The story now you may know, you may have heard. It's a parable. There are many different versions out there. This is the parable of the farmer and the farmer's horse, or the farmer's horse, however you want to. I think it says the farmer's horse. The farmer's horse starts with, can you guess? A farmer and a horse, right? Yeah, I know. It's getting deeper. Don't worry. The farmer has a horse on his farm, and the horse is very helpful because the horse helps the farmer do what you do on farms, which is grow things and feed people, right? And so there's the farmer. Now, what happens is that the horse runs away. And you may notice that the pictures will or may not go with what I'm saying, because I didn't give great cues to the tech person. So just imagine that this is perfectly aligned. The farmer's horse runs away. And it's hard to work without a horse. There's it running away. And then you see it's very hard to work missing a horse when you're expecting to have two horses and you only have one horsepower instead of two. And so the farmer's friends come by. They have heard that the horse ran away. And they say, oh my gosh, such bad luck that your horse has run away. The farmer responds, who knows what is good or bad? The farmer's horse, after some time, comes back to the farm, bringing with it wild horses in abundance. So not just the one that ran away, but even more. And the friends come by and they say, what good luck that your horse brought some more horses. So now you can do extra work. You can maybe, I don't know, sell these or train them or ride them. And the farmer says, who knows what is good or bad? The son rides these wild horses. The son of the farmer is out riding wild horses, and he falls, and he breaks his leg. Guess what the farmer's friends come by and say? They say, what bad luck. Your son broke his leg. Bless you. Your son broke his leg. Bad luck. And the farmer says, who knows? Who knows what is good or bad? In this area, war breaks out. War breaks out and all are conscripted. People are joyous. They're celebrating going to war. They're saying, oh, these young men probably in that time, these young men can go and fight for our city-state, for our country. They can go defend us against the invaders. The son is sad that he cannot go because his leg is, there he is, he's pretty sad. His leg's broken, right? The farmer's friends say, what? Poor luck, what bad luck that your son cannot go to war. Here it might be easier for us to say, well, you know, who knows what's good or bad here? Right? Because many die in the battles. Many die in the battles, and so what good luck that he did not go? Well, who knows? Who knows what is good or bad when the son is home with his father, having not gone to war? Say, what good luck? And the farmer says, who knows? Who knows what is good or bad? Of course, we could keep on going, right? You can think of what might happen next, what could be good or what could have bad consequences. The purpose of this story is to get to that crux of what's good, what's bad. Are we putting those labels on? So as we sing our recessional hymn, and as the children go off to their classroom or classrooms, think about that. Who knows what is good or bad? So let us sing, go now in peace.
Go now in peace. Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere.
You know, it's funny, I talked about shared ministry, and I said, oh, it's about doing readings or stories during the service, and today it's really just me. And there's a couple reasons for that, even though I say I really like having different people involved. After a holiday, sometimes it's hard during that holiday week to put in the extra work, because it's extra work to reach out and say, can you do this part? Can you do this part? So thank you for bearing with me when you just get me this morning. And please come join me. I'm not saying come up again. You can come up to the front, of course, but when we do services, when I have others coming up, when I reach out and say, join me for planning, I'd love to have you. I'd love to have different voices because it is this shared ministry. Our reading today is from Robert Emmons. He's a professor of psychology at the University of California, Davis, and he writes about what gets in the way of gratitude. And I thought this picture was great. I mean, I just find these pictures online. It's like, oh, these little sort of wet floor signs, or like things getting in the way of us trying to be grateful, of our gratitude. In Robert Emmons' words, in gratitude and humility, we turn to realities outside of ourselves. We become aware of our limitations and our need to rely on others. In gratitude and humility, we acknowledge the myth of self-sufficiency. We look upward and outward to sources that sustain us. Becoming aware of realities greater than ourselves shields us from the illusion of being self-made, being here on this planet by right, expecting everything and owing nothing. The humble person says that life is a gift to be grateful for, not a right to be claimed. Humility ushers in a grateful response to life. Humility is a key to gratitude because living humbly is the truest approach to life. Humble people are grounded in the truth that they need others, and we embody this in our work. We all do. We are not self-sufficient. We did not create ourselves. We depend on parents, friends, our pets, God, the universe, and yes, even the government, to provide what we cannot provide for ourselves. Seeing with grateful eyes requires that we see the web of interconnection in which we alternate between being givers and receivers. The humble person says that life is a gift to be grateful for, not a right to be claimed. Humility is profoundly countercultural. It does not come easily or naturally, particularly in a culture that values self-aggrandizement. It requires the sustained focus on others rather than self. Or as the Jewish proverb states, humility is limiting oneself to an appropriate space while leaving room for others. Thinking about oneself is natural. Humility is unnatural. Perhaps this is why gratitude is counterintuitive. It goes against our natural inclinations. We want to take credit for the good that we encounter. The self-serving bias is the adult derivative of childhood egocentricity. So reining in entitlement and embracing gratitude and humility in spiritual and psychologically liberating. Gratitude is a recognition that life owes me nothing, and all the good I have is a gift. It's not a getting of what we are entitled to. My eyes are a gift. So is my wife, my freedom, my job, and by every breath. Here ends our reading. Who has heard the aphorism, practice makes perfect? I'm guessing most of us have heard that. And the sentiment, it's not what I have here. Practice makes perfect is what we often hear and say. And the sentiment is that if someone wants to get better at something, they should practice. They should do it over and over. You want to play a musical instrument, take time every day to learn scales and rhythms, right? Improve math, we'll do practice sets, practice problems. Enter a baking contest, we'll bake a lot at home. Do you want to be more grateful? Well, write thank you notes. And as an aside, right, remember we're writing thank you notes? There's some note cards in the back next to the hymnals. And you can all practice more. You can get thank you notes. You can write them during service. You can take some home. Today is the last day of November. But of course, you are allowed and welcome to write thank you notes into December. Right? Whatever it is you wish to improve, whatever it is you wish to improve to get more comfortable, more proficient with, we practice. Right? Practice is a well-known and well-used path to self-betterment. Do something over and over. You're going to get better about whatever you're doing over and over. Now, this is true to a point, and that's why I have the words different, because this is not 100% accurate, because practice only makes permanent. I will get more skilled at playing my instrument when I take the time to practice. I will be able to speak another language better when I go over vocabulary again and again. But if I constantly use the wrong finger combination for a note, if I always say a new word inaccurately, then I will form a habit of incorrect pronunciation or incorrect fingering, right? It'll become an ingrained habit, not necessarily perfection, just permanent. That's why practice makes permanent. Just as many feet walking over the grass creates a path, so will habitual movements make pathways in our actions and in our habits. And humans tend to be creatures of habit, but we aren't only creatures of habit. That's the good news. We're able to perceive ourselves. We're able to step back and say, oh, I'm doing this. Okay, I'm thinking about this. We can use that critical, that mindful eye, and we can observe and we can consciously decide what we want to do, how we want to think. So let's practice. I ask you to enter with me a sort of thought experiment. For a few moments, I want you to think about the past few days, the past few weeks. Excuse me. The exact time frame isn't that important. But recall what you've done. Recall what you've experienced. And as you are remembering the recent past, I want you to focus on the negative. Anything that went badly, where you felt out of control, or anxious, or upset, angry, or sad. What has gone badly for you? Now I'm going to stop us very quickly because I don't really want to spend a lot of time on negativity, right? So let's shift the sort of complementary side of that exercise. Recall again the past few days or weeks. It can be the same time, a different time period, the same event, slightly altered, but this time focus on the positive, right? What went well for you? What were you grateful for? Where did you feel happy? Where you found a sense of accomplishment? Where were you joyous, at peace, or at calm? What has gone well for you? How did that feel? Were there differences between those two times? I mean, I hope the answer is yes. What were some of those differences? Did you just say?
It's much more easier to focus on the negative because that's what we're used to doing.
It's much more easier to focus on the negative because that's what we're used to doing. Yeah. Uplifting to think about the positivity. It's a relief when something positive comes after the hard part, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's a reason I gave less time for negativity and ended with positivity. I mean, like, if I did the opposite way, then we might be practicing and be thinking about, right? This is embodying what I'm talking about here. Right? And is this a mind trick? It's like, hold on, we're just tricking ourselves. Like, we're just like messing with our minds because we're not changing what happened in our lives. We can't change the past. But we can change how we view the past. So yeah, it's a mind trick, but that shift of mindset makes a huge difference. I have an example for you from my life, from my grandmother. She was really good about being negative. She's really good at it. I mean, she was fun-loving and filled with energy, but she was practiced in this sense of negativity. We would go out for dinner, and almost everything would go wrong. The food was too cold. The bathroom was dirty. Her husband wasn't talking enough. Her husband was talking too much. Yeah, see what's happening here? Yeah, right? The meal was too expensive. I mean, the litany could go on and on, no matter what the exact situation was. And other family members who were at the same meal, with the same experience, with the same food, the same people, would have a very different experience. We enjoyed the food. We're engaged in the conversation. We considered the prices reasonable, and we didn't notice uncleanliness. Now, it wasn't unpleasant to be with my grandmother, but it sometimes seemed that we were living two different realities. And this is where practicing makes permanent holds true to our mindset in addition to our actions. So it's not just piano practicing. This can be in our minds and how we're thinking, because we can shift our outlook. And that shifting can change over time, but if we keep having the same one, we keep walking that outlook becomes really easily trod. A well-worn path in our minds, too, right? Keep thinking of something with negative connotations, and it will stay that way in your mind. Always focus on the positive, and you will remember that experience in a more positive light. Reminisce with regret, and you'll hold on to that regret. Reminisce with gratitude, you will hold on with gratitude. This, again, sounds like a mind trick. It's like, you're just making this up. It's like, yeah, sort of. Is it being untrue to ourselves? Well, here's the thing. The question is not whether or not our emotions inform our memory. The question is if we know we're doing it. Because our emotions will always inform our memory, right? We can't help but inform what we're thinking about, how we're remembering life by our emotions. It's just whether we know about it. The ability to shift our outlook is human nature. And it's also human nature to sort of forget our power that we have over our own experiences. Now, there's an aspect of psychology which actually deals with this ability to change our outlook. And the official term is neuroplasticity, which is really, it's like neuroplasticity, like changing your mind, flexibility of your brain, really. The ability for your mind to be flexible, especially with regard to emotions and feelings. And we can actually train our minds to act differently with regard to memory and expectations. Now, with so many topics, I get excited. It's like, I could keep on going with this. Like, this lesson can also be looked at backwards. We can do the sort of complement of what we're talking about. So I can look at what I do over and over and guess of what I'm practicing. Like, oh, I'm going to get really good at that, right? We can look at our repetition and see what we may be supporting, what paths we are creating, positive or negative. When I wake up in the morning, I have a couple habits, things I do every day, things I practice, and some things I do support me in being happy, healthy, and mindfully centered, and some of them do not. So one of the first things I do each morning is scroll social media. You can guess where I'm going, right? And even as I'm scrolling, I find the action sort of time-wasting, alienating, oftentimes depressing. And what might have started as something that I found a relaxing start to the day has become a sense of sort of self-loathing and negativity. And yet, I've become very proficient at scrolling through social media. I do it, I've practiced this, right? I've gotten good at wasting my own time. Right? Now, on the other hand, I also exercise most mornings, either on my own, at home, running around, like literally running around, or at a gym with friends. Now, in contrast with social media, I gain a sense of connection with other people or with something larger than myself. I feel inner calm and boosted self-esteem. Now, exercise is something I do regularly, and I've practiced it. Not just practiced the movements, but practiced starting that. Because that's the hard part. It's like, oh, I don't have that habit. It's like, well, you gotta practice. You gotta start. And therefore, I'm become proficient with getting up and being active. Now, the point here is that through repetition, practice makes permanent, right? The habits create pathways of ease in our minds, create pathways of ease in our actions. I don't want to be a good social media user. I don't want to be proficient in scrolling. So maybe I lean into my neuroplasticity and the truth that practice makes permanent. I can practice a different mindset. I can practice a different activity in the morning. Now, these are small steps. Each small step, each shift in our perception or shift in our actions, minuscule change, they pile up like the proverbial snowflakes. Remember these snowflakes? Talked about a couple weeks ago. I actually ordered snow for this morning. You didn't know that. Yeah, right? You wouldn't think a Unitarian Universalist minister has connections like that. But I said, I'm going to talk about snowflakes. Universe, what can you do? Those snowflakes, infinitesimal, well, you can see them. You can get pictures. I did get these books of the man who started taking pictures, who coined the all snowflakes are different. There's one here, and there's a copy in the back, too. You're welcome. Bless you. To look at them now. Use that copy, or after the service, you can use either copy, to look at these pictures of snowflakes. These really, really small things, so beautiful, pile up, right? Winter wonderland of skiing, of sledding, of shoveling, right? They're so small. The message this morning is that we notice the permanence we're creating in our lives, and we're also looking at how we might shift our mindset to those little snowflakes. And the message is essentially to be mindful and then choose. If you're like, all right, I'm going to take notes. I see you taking notes. Be mindful and then choose. That's it right there. Right? Know what you're doing, know what you're thinking, and then decide whether that's how you want to act, whether that's how you want to think. Right? Because we can decide how we want to act and how we want to think. Remember that thought exercise earlier? That value we put on the experience, the good, the bad, it's sort of construed through our interpretation. And you can do that thought exercise whenever you like. When you notice, I'm in a really negative place, you can like think about things in a positive way. It's hard. It's those snowflakes, little steps. It gets easier each time. Good and bad. Is that just our interpretation? Is the horse running away good or bad? We can sort of decide our own interpretation. That's the neuroplasticity. It's also Eastern, ancient Eastern philosophy. That's the Taoist story we heard, or the Buddhist saying, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Another one of those like sort of pithy, nice, really difficult sayings. Right? That's tough. Pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. That doesn't feel good when you're in a place of pain or suffering. I mean, I can think of many times in my life when suffering did not feel optional. When I was like, oh yeah, I can just choose not to suffer here. That doesn't, right? I'm sure you can all think of times in your lives. So what does that mean? It means that there are hardships in life. There are times when things do not go our way. This is true. This will happen. If you have not been upset in your life before, things will not go your way. Right? There'll be time when our horse runs away. Proverbial. There will be pain. It's inevitable. Our lives all have pain, but suffering is different. Suffering is what we do with that pain we have. The Dalai Lama says, to a large extent, whether you suffer depends on how you respond to a given situation. We can sit with our pain, we can stew with it, we can let everyone know about our pain, we can create more suffering for ourselves, for others, or we can choose to have a very different reaction. And that's part of the hardest part. That's the hardest part of this, is that suffering is and can be optional. I take the advice, and I've mentioned this man before, of Dr. Viktor Frankl. I try to take his advice. I try to take his advice. He's a neurologist, a psychiatrist, and a Holocaust survivor. And in Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, he states, everything can be taken away from a man or woman, but one thing, the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. Now, Viktor Frankl has a certain clout in saying this, having lost everything, possessions, family, everything. Lost everything and still says we can choose how we respond. Yeah, he still says humans have the freedom to choose their reaction. So getting to a place where we can say with wholehearted conviction, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. That takes work, that takes time, that takes practice, right? But this is one of those steps on the way. This is one of those snowflakes on the way to choosing gratitude. An important thing to remember is it's not what happens to us that's important. It's not that, oh, we only have good things happen in our lives. It's how we respond. It's how we interpret what's happening. Because we all experience heartache. We all experience jubilation. The difference is how we choose to react. And I have a couple, there's a couple different approaches to pain, to heartache. You could say, and we all do this, I do this, I'm sure many of you do it, well, it could be worse, right? Oh, this is bad, it could be worse, right? The outlook diminishes our own experience of pain or discomfort by comparing it to something or someone else. I missed my bus today, but at least it's not raining or snowing. Could be worse, right? I mean, we could keep doing this and seeing how our hardship could be worse to sort of diminish our own suffering. This is one way to increase gratitude, is compare it, right? I feel thankful when I look at where we live in the country and the freedoms we still have, especially compared to what it could be in other parts of the country or in other parts of the world. It could be worse. Now, you see that this outlook relies on judging someone or something being worse off than us. So even though sometimes it helps, this is one of those first steps, saying it could be worse, but we can go further. What did the farmer say? The farmer never said, well, at least I don't have the problems of Earl down the street, right? No, the farmer says, who knows what is good or bad? The farmer is realizing that every action, every experience can have positive, negative, can have good and bad, possibly does in every experience. The definition of this good and bad is in flux, and there isn't a universal set. So the experience may lead to something positive. I missed my bus, but maybe on the next one I get, I'll meet my next best friend. Right? It's not just it could be worse, but who knows what is good or bad? Well, the horse ran away, but it might bring wild horses. And then going further takes practice. Again, the snow, the small pieces of snow, the small steps, so we can get this path of long-term, deep spiritual positivity and gratitude, reframing our lives. Here's a, keeping with the winter theme today, here's an example from the other side of my family. Some winters ago, we were on a family vacation, and for reasons I can't really remember, Isabella, my wife, her dad drove us from the airport to our car. I don't remember why that was happening, but this happened. And it was in December, so it was cold. So we rushed from one car to the next. We get our luggage put in the trunk, and we get in, and we start the car. We start the car. Well, we tried to start the car, right? And it wasn't happening. And actually, I'm doing this. We weren't actually doing this. It was more like that now, right? That doesn't... Our battery was dead, which meant that instead of rushing off home, I had some time with my family figuring out how to jumpstart a first-generation Prius from a second-generation Prius. Now, in some crowds, this difficulty may be missed, but I think we may have some inclination of what that means, because there's more than one battery in a Prius, and one of them you don't want to jump to or from. That's the big one. And the other one is not where other cars usually put it. So it's not in the front of the car. So you have to find it. If you have to find out what you attach to, because it's not always the battery, right? So there were difficulties. It wasn't just, oh, I know how to jumpstart a car, right? It was learning about what to do. So how did we react, right? It doesn't matter what happened. That's what I said the whole sermon. It doesn't matter what happened. What matters is how we reacted. That's the crux. We could have been angry or upset that we were stuck in the cold trying to get a car started. My father-in-law, he was thankful. What? How could he possibly be thankful? He was grateful. He wasn't just being silly. He was actually grateful that our battery died, because we were forced to have more time together and enjoying that crisp air. And he is a scientist at heart. He loved learning something new. He was so thankful. Like, we got to be out here with the snow coming down, learning how to jumpstart this car, right? The activities aren't different from anything which might happen in your life. Your car may stop working. You may hurt yourself. Something may not go as expected. The difference is the internal decision, the mindfulness to be grateful. There are mental and spiritual exercises, right? These are the sort of mind games, those mental and spiritual exercises based solely on outlook. Consists of taking experiences and reframing our attitude around it. Reframing this attitude. I'm so frustrated that our car battery died. Reframed. I am thankful that I had time with my family and got to learn something new. Again, from Viktor Frankl. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. The crux of his message is we can't control everything that happens, but we can always control our reaction. So then reframing is to move from this sucks. It could be worse. Who knows what is bad or good? All life is a gift. At different points in my life, I am along different places of that spectrum. Being aware, being mindful, being grateful, it's so easy and so difficult. It takes a lot of practice. These small steps, these snowflakes building up on each other. An acknowledgement that life is good over and over helps make our whole being and our whole world more grateful. It helps walk that path of gratitude. I end today with the same prayer that I concluded service with a few weeks ago from the 13th century German theologian Meister Eckhart. And it speaks to the simplicity, the difficulty of the task at hand. If the only prayer you ever say in your whole life was thank you, that would be enough. Thank you and amen.
You're my life, you're my breath, you're a smile, you're my guest. You're the earth, you're the sun, you're the grass, you are love. You're my hands, you're a bug, you're my eyes, you're a hug. You're the light in the dark, you're the spark, you are fun. You're my mom, you are water, you're the stars, you're my daughter. You're my friend till the end, you're my dreams, you're my father. You're the ants on the ground, the miracles that surround. I'm feeling it all around, the hemisphere in the clouds. You're my pain, you're my sorrow, you're my hope for tomorrow. You're the strength when I'm hollow, you're the path that I follow. You're the blessings that exist, the small things that are bliss. The gift to realize that
all that I am, all that I see, all that I've been and all that I'll ever be is a blessing. It's so amazing and I'm grateful for it all, for it all.
Stop to take a bow and keep moving forward and start looking towards your heart. It'll open all the doors and only then you'll start to hear the world singing chorus with your mind and heart. Aligned to purpose, everything
all
will feel gorgeous.
I sit and pray cause what I have is more than I deserve or could ever imagine. How do I give back to all of this magic and spread the love so everybody can have it? Doesn't matter if I'm rich or poor, if I got a family or if I'm all alone. Bad things happen, I can just complain and moan. But there's a million things that I can be grateful for.
Everything I hope and everything I dream, everything I feel and everything I be, I look deep down and feel all.
all the blessings. Everything I am and everything I see. Everything I hope and everything I dream. Everything I feel and everything I be. I'm grateful for it all. It's amazing. Everything I am and everything I see. Everything I hope and everything I dream. Everything I feel and everything I be. I look through the town and feel all the blessings. Everything I am and everything I see. That exist, the small things that are bliss, the gift to realize that everything is a gift.
One of the reasons that rituals exist is because practice makes permanent. It's one of the reasons that rituals exist. Not only do we get better at doing an action or thinking in a certain way, but actions become comfort in of themselves, a time of comfort with something familiar, a familiar experience. And even though we have much variety in our religion and in our services, we have rituals too, actions we do over and over again. So we're familiar, so we practice. Lighting our chalice is one of them. Matters of the Heart is a Unitarian Universalist ritual named different things in different congregations, not universal, but in many of them. It's a time when we practice listening to each other, a time to work on and improve our listening. And we now enter into this holy ritual of being present in fellowship. If you have a sorrow or a joy which overflows into this community, please come forward and share briefly into the microphone. If you need to adjust the height, you just grab. And someone will help you if it doesn't work. That's okay. If you're with us online, you can raise your physical or virtual hand and you'll be unmuted. And for anyone sharing, please do start with your name.
If we can bring this time of sharing to a close. Back to you, Rev. Andrew.
Our sung response is in the teal or blue paperback hymnal. If you don't have one, the lyrics will still be up here. If you want one, they're in the back. Filled with loving kindness.
May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May
When we practice, we get better at being grateful. We practice gratitude. Through the good times, it is easier. Through the hard and sad times, a bit more difficult. So let us practice in prayer. For the sun and the dawn, which we did not create. For the moon and evening, which we did not make. For food which we plant but cannot grow. For friends and loved ones we have not earned and cannot buy. For this gathered community which welcomes us as we are from wherever we have come. For all our free churches that keep us human and encourage us in our quest for beauty, truth, and love. For all things which come to us as gifts of being from sources beyond ourselves. Gifts of life and love and friendship. We lift up our hearts in thanks this day. Amen. Please rise in body or in spirit for our closing hymn, which is again in the gray hymnal. Number 6, Just as Long as I Have Breath.
Just as long as I have breath, I must answer yes to life. Though with pain I made my way, still with hope I meet each day. If they asked what I did well, tell them I said yes to life.
We extinguish the proverbial candle of hope, our candle of peace, and our chalice here, knowing that the hope, peace, light of faith, and beacon will remain lit in our lives. With these words from my friend and colleague, Sandra Fees. May you rise in the morning and greet the dawn with a grateful heart. Throughout the day, may you accept the simple gifts that arise, food, shelter, water, sunshine, with a grateful heart. May you greet others whose paths you cross with that same gratefulness. And when evening comes, may you greet sleep with a grateful heart, a heart of compassion and joy. Amen and blessed be. Amen.